I'm Dana Lloyd. Welcome to Soul Sister Conversations, the podcast, where you will be inspired and empowered to connect more deeply with your authentic self as we explore topics of personal development, leadership, and spirituality. Your journey to your most authentic self starts right now. In 2003, at age 26, Chris Wark was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. After surgery, he made a decision to go against his doctor's advice, opting out of chemotherapy, choosing to use nutrition and natural therapies to heal. It has been 17 years since his diagnosis. On the episode today, he shares his experience with cancer and what he did to radically change his life to influence his own healing. You can read about his healing journey in detail in his best-selling book, Chris Beat Cancer. Please note, this episode is not to influence or convince you to replace your medical advice if you are currently seeking or undergoing cancer treatment. It is simply one man's story of becoming an active participant in influencing his own healing by radically changing his lifestyle, and he shares the outcomes that he experienced by doing that while under care of a physician. Welcome, Chris Wark, to Soul Sister Conversations.
Hi, Dana. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I am very pleased to share your story. I appreciate you sharing your story. It's very personal and empowering. So your story, you are a young adult cancer survivor, best-selling author and patient advocate, and you were diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer in 2003 at age 26. And after surgery, you made the decision to go against your doctor's advice, opting out of chemotherapy, and chose to use nutrition and natural therapies to heal. Now, I'm curious, in your life before cancer, what did your life look like? How were you living? You're bebopping along in life, and what was happening?
Yeah, I was a typical American. So I was eating animal products 3 times a day, right? Meat and dairy. I was eating processed food, fast food, and junk food a lot. Most of my meals were in that category. And I'd been eating that way for, you know, over a decade or longer. Some people can get away with unhealthy choices and for much longer than others. Mm-hmm. And for example, you know, we all know the 90-year-old guy who smokes cigarettes, but he's an outlier, right? Cigarettes are the number one cause of cancer. They cause heart disease, all kinds of disease in the body, of course, lung disease. And most people will die young if they smoke their whole life. So our diet and lifestyle choices really do matter. We're not pre-programmed to die at a certain time. Your genes don't determine your fate to the extent that your choices have no effect on your outcome. And that was a lesson that I learned pretty quickly. And it was a very empowering lesson that the way I was living might be killing me. And so if that was true, then I could also change the way I lived my life. And in doing so, I could help my body heal. I could help myself survive and thrive. I could increase the number of years in my life. And so that's a pretty exciting prospect. And you realize you're not a powerless victim of disease, that, hey, you know, your choices might have led you up to it. There may be some genetic component, but we know that diet and lifestyle influence the way our genes express, thanks to the field of epigenetic research. And so you have control over your life and your future. And so anyway, before cancer, right, I was just a high energy guy. I was in real estate. I was a musician, playing in a band, playing shows, writing music. I was buying houses and fixing them up, and pursuing a career in real estate investing. And I was really excited about my life, but I was going 90 miles an hour and not taking care of myself. Cancer got me early. Mm. So the diagnosis happened when I was 26, and it was preceded by months of abdominal discomfort. So I would have these, dull, achy kind of pain in my stomach, you know, for lack of a better word, right? Now it's just, you call that area your stomach, right?
Right. Right. The whole general area.
My tummy. And so I would have this aching pain that would come and go. And then occasionally there would be like a sharp pain, but it wasn't all day, every day. It was just periodic. It was infrequent and it would pass and then I would feel fine. So that was a sort of a tricky part of it, because I kept thinking, oh, well, I feel fine most of the time. And then I would get a twinge of pain. And then I'd be like, well, maybe, you know, maybe it'll be okay tomorrow. And then I would feel pretty good. And then I would get a twinge of pain again. So I kind of went through this many, many months, like the better part of a year, of kind of thinking, well, hopefully it'll get better. Hopefully it'll get better. And then there would be a stretch of time where I didn't have any pain. And I'd be like, okay, cool. And then I would feel it again. So eventually I did go to the doctor because the pain got to be pretty bad.
And
it started increasing in the fall of that year, like really, you know, after, you know, a period of it not really being very bad. And so I had a colonoscopy, and they, which is very unusual for a 26-year-old.
Like, right.
But I'm just thankful that the gastro doctor I went to was, you know, normally they'd be like, there's no way it's colon cancer, but he did a colonoscopy and he saw a tumor in there, and they biopsied it and sent it to the lab, and it was colon cancer. So, they said, you got to get surgery. This was just a few days before Christmas. So they were trying to like just jam me into the surgical schedule at the hospital immediately. And, I didn't want to do that because I was, the diagnosis itself is so shocking, and it just turns your world upside down. And I thought, just thought, well, what would be, what, you know, can I just at least spend a normal Christmas with my family and not be in the hospital?
Right.
So we postponed it to December 30th. And I went in and they took out the tumor. And when I woke up, they said, it's worse than we thought. We assumed, and we're hoping you would be stage 2. But you're not. You're stage 3C, which means it spread to your lymph nodes, and you're going to need 9 to 12 months of chemotherapy.
And you thought what?
I thought I was on some heavy medication when they gave me that news. And I just kind of thought, okay, you know, I guess this is my life now. I knew it wasn't good news.
Did you immediately go to, I'm not going to have a good outcome? Did you immediately jump there or?
No. I just, again, I was on very heavy medication. And so I was just in the hospital bed, just thinking, you know, kind of just thinking this is not very good news. And I don't know what I'm going to do. So, I mean, I assumed I would do chemo. I was just kind of like, I was trying to process it all.
Right.
But a couple things happened in the hospital that got me thinking a little differently. And the first one was the very first meal that they served me.
Yes.
Which you're laughing because you must know what it is.
Yeah. When I read the book, you know, that's a good thing about your book, that you inject a lot of humor into it. This is not a difficult read. It's an easy read. You take us through it like an everyday person. So yeah, what was your first sign that started taking you off the I guess the normal regime, and you started thinking about going the healing route, and it started with your lunch?
Yeah, the first sign was definitely lunch. They brought me a sloppy joe. Which, you know, the sloppy joe is such a funny, such a funny food item in itself, because nobody likes them. Nobody likes sloppy joes. Restaurants don't serve them, right? People don't want a sloppy joe. They don't want one. And the only place that I knew you could get a sloppy joe would be like summer camp, the military, and definitely prison.
Yeah.
And surprise, in the hospital. They serve them in hospitals to sick people, cancer patients. So that, yeah, I mean, how can you not laugh about that, right? And by the way, I'm a goofball. I'm not a very serious person. I love to laugh, and I love to find humor I love to make fun, not in a mean way, but I'm just saying, like, I just love to find humor in life. And,
well, that which made the book a really easy read, because, you're putting this enlightened spin on it, because we recognize you're in a very difficult position in your life. This is not, you're staring down something that's, nobody wants to stare down, but you're bringing to the forefront some very important points and using humor to do it. And having this horrible ground meat in front of you for a colon cancer patient made you begin to question. This is the beginning of you questioning, what am I going to do next to heal myself?
Yeah. And I was, of course, thinking, why are they serving this to sick people, right? What something is wrong with the system. Cause I'd never been a hospital patient. I had no health problems before this, never taken a pharmaceutical, I'm sure I'd had antibiotics at some point as a kid, but I'd had pain medicine when they took my wisdom teeth out, stuff like that, but I wasn't taking pharmaceutical drugs. Right. And, yeah, I was like, why is there such a big disconnect between healthcare and actually healthy living? Because I knew enough about what healthy living looked like. My mom was always into healthy stuff and had a big stacks and stacks and stacks of books on natural living and holistic medicine and alternative cancer therapies. She had stacks of these books that she had read over many decades and just saved them all, which turned out to be a huge blessing for me. But so I was around that. I grew up in that environment, but she wasn't hardcore like today's crunchy moms. Like, she wasn't eating organic. She wasn't, she was still eating animal foods. And my first birthday was at a McDonald's, so it wasn't like, she wasn't that hardcore, but she did like to shop at the health food stores and buy, the peanut butter that you have to stir up with no added sugar and
sprout. So there was a general awareness floating in the background because
she was more aware than your average mom, right? Mm-hmm. She was buying sprouts and kefir and wheat germ and always had lots of supplements that she took and stuff like that. So, and she was a healthy person. Like, she didn't have any health problems. So, I had that background. And then I also worked at a Wild Oats, which was bought out by Whole Foods. So I worked in a natural health, grocery store, and I knew the difference between organic produce and conventional. And I knew my way around a juice bar, and I knew that existed, right? I knew there was a super healthy way to live, and I wasn't
You weren't doing it.
No, I wasn't doing it, and I liked it. Like, I thought it was great, and it seemed like a really good idea. But it was expensive, and I was just wasn't investing in my health. I felt invincible, and I was a junk food connoisseur. So anyway, they served me the sloppy Joe, and the wheels are kind of turning. And then a few days later, my surgeon came in to check on me, and we had a conversation. And I said, "Hey, is there any food I need to avoid?" Because again, he just took out a third of my large intestine. So everything you eat is going to pass through that area with the stitches and all. And so I just didn't want to eat the wrong thing. I just want to know. There are lists of foods that, like, do not, whatever you do, right? Mm-hmm. Do not eat hot sauce or whatever. Mm-hmm. And his answer was, "No, just don't lift anything heavier than a beer."
Right. Did that shock you?
I was just like, okay. Right. He was trying to be funny. But he was also telling me, it doesn't matter what you eat. Right. Doesn't matter at all. And even the fact that he mentioned beer seemed to think that doesn't matter. He'd go, have a beer. Whatever.
Right. You're 26. Yeah.
That's what you yeah. do. So yeah, that was like not encouraging. And again, another sort of red flag that the conventional medical system was not concerned at all with prevention or healthy living. So I went home and I was recovering from surgery. And as I got off the pain medication pretty quickly, I just didn't like the feeling of being on it. And so I weaned myself off before I even, got through the bottle. And as I was sobering up, over a few days or whatever, I started to really start thinking about the future. Like, what is going to happen next?
Right.
With this chemo. And I had never had any person close to me go through cancer, which sounds weird to say, but I mean, at 26 and in January 2004, I mean, yeah, cancer was out there and stuff, but I just didn't know anybody that had gone through it. I mean, close to me. So I'd had a pastor that had had cancer, but it was before I met him, you know, and there was one guy at our church that had cancer, and I only saw him a couple times, but when I did, it was alarming because he was in a late stage state. So he was emaciated, skin and bones, yellow skin, no hair, wearing a mask to church. And I just thought, and you know, that was back when someone had a mask on, you thought, oh my gosh, right? Something's wrong with this person. I was just, and I'd seen other cancer patients in that state, you know, out in the world. And it makes an impression on you.
Sure.
When you see another human in that state. So I could see myself in that state, and that was frightening.
Yeah.
And I instinctively, in the core of my being, felt that I was not strong enough to endure chemotherapy. I just knew.
Physically or emotionally?
Physically. Mm. I knew how weak and vulnerable my body was. I was very thin. I'd lost a ton of weight. I was extremely skinny. I was already thin anyway. And then a year of dealing with this abdominal pain and not eating very much because eating seemed to aggravate it. And then, you know, going in the hospital and then not eating for days in there and all that. So I was underweight, and I just knew I was physically not capable of enduring it, at least at that time. So that was when, even though I didn't really articulate it, I just felt it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And instincts and intuition are very powerful. Like, well, you should always listen to your gut. You shouldn't ignore it.
Yeah.
Right? You should not ignore that. I mean, we've all had those instances in our life where we were making a big decision, an important decision, and our gut was telling us, oh, I didn't have a good feeling about it, and we did it anyway. And then we realized it was a bad decision.
Right.
I ignored your gut.
So you were developing that internal resistance, you said, to the idea of chemotherapy. So how did you end up, like, how much time was it that you began to go, hey, I'm going to actually go this route?
Not much time. So me just thinking about that over the course of a couple days, I became, you know, pretty concerned that this was not what I should do. And I didn't know what else to do. And so my wife and I prayed about it. And I just said, God, if there's another way besides chemotherapy, please show me. And I trust you that you're going to supply all of my needs. And thank you in advance, you know? And so I just prayed a simple prayer of faith, and I asked for help, believing that I would get it, you know. And 2 days later, I got a book that was sent to me from a man in Alaska. And this guy named Al was a friend of my dad's. My dad had told him about my diagnosis. Al bought this book and sent it to me. And I started reading it. It was written by a man named George Malcolmus. The book's called God's Way to Ultimate Health. So I start reading it, and George is telling his story, cancer story. He had colon cancer. He refused surgery and chemotherapy and healed with a radical change of diet and lifestyle. And I thought, oh my gosh, okay, it's possible.
My prayers have been answered.
Oh, for sure. There was no doubt in my mind. I prayed, I asked for something, this showed up, right? Like, okay, message received loud and clear. And I mean, I was overcome with emotion. I was, you know, a few chapters into his book, physically, you know, crying as I was reading. I mean, tears coming down my face because I felt so overwhelmed with emotion and gratitude, right?
And another way.
Yeah, that I had, you know, an option. And so So his approach, and he had seen, he was a former pastor and had seen a bunch of people go through cancer and die. And then he got, you know, found out he had colon cancer and basically decided he didn't want to do conventional treatment because he saw it fail, you know, people that he loved, including his own mother. And he just happened to have a healthy, you know, health nut buddy who said, man, you need to get, go back to the Garden of Eden. You just eat raw fruits and vegetables and drink a lot of carrot juice. And so he did it. And then a year later, you know, no tumor. So I was like, that's what I'm going to do. Right. This, it worked for this guy. Maybe it can work for me. And it certainly isn't going to hurt me. Right.
Right.
The biggest risk is that it doesn't help, but there's no risk of harm.
Right.
In eating a hardcore healthy diet that's rich in fruits and vegetables. And I was actually excited about it because it was, I had never heard of a raw food diet at that time. Even working at Wild Oats, I didn't know there was a thing called a raw foodist or a raw food diet. I'm, you know, it's Memphis, Tennessee. So lots of folks in California probably knew about it, but, but I did not. And I was really interested to see what would happen. You know, it was like, this is an adventure. This is really, you know, and it gave me control over my, my life. It gave me a sense of control and personal responsibility and a hope. And so that was an overnight conversion. Overnight. I mean, literally I went straight to the grocery store, which I think it was a Whole Foods by then, and loaded up the cart with vegetables and fruit, and bought a juicer and bought a giant, you know, 25 pound bag of carrots, organic carrots, of course, and was like, I'm doing this. Like, so that was an overnight decision that anyone can do. Anyone can change their diet overnight. Any person can do that. So,
So you were super excited about this, and then you told everyone about it, your family members, but you did not receive the support you had expected.
I wouldn't say I told everyone, but I told my wife, and then everybody else found out. Right. I told my wife and my mom was supportive. She was like, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think that's good. You know, she was definitely on board, and she had some, she was like, well, there's a book, you know, there's a book I have that you should look at, you know, and of course she had a ton of books.
Right.
Every, as I started down this research path, every book or author or survivor or doctor or whatever that I kind of heard about somewhere, she had their book. It was just crazy. Every single one. I'm like, have you heard of, you know, Dr. Lorraine Day? She's like, oh yeah, I've got some books and tapes. Have you heard of Dr. Richard Schultz? Oh yeah, I've got, you know, it's like, it was just crazy. So she had every book by Paul Bragg. I mean, it was just on and on and on. And so, so that was really helpful. But yeah, the word spread pretty quickly around the family. And I found that there were multiple family members were putting pressure on me to do chemotherapy. They did not think I was making a good decision. They, you know, had other friends or had known people who tried quote unquote alternative therapies and died. Sure. And they're saying, you know, you got to do what the doctor says, you know, don't you think if there was something better than chemo, they would know about it. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to answer these questions.
Right.
I know how to answer them now, but I didn't know how to answer them then. And so that put a lot of fear and stress into my life, that was not helpful, but these are people who love me and they really were trying to help. And so I don't fault them for it. They really did love me deeply and were concerned that I was going to die and make the wrong decision. And, they were trying their best. So I agreed to go see the oncologist that I had been referred to. And by the way, I mean, this is just typical, right? It's like, if you're going to get your house painted or your kitchen renovated, you want to call around, you want to get three estimates at least.
Right.
Right. And compare, like, who are these people? You know, what's their track record? Can I get some references? But it's like, so in the medical community, that almost never happens. What happens is you just get referred to someone and you're like, okay, I guess this is my doctor. And so I was just referred to some guy. And so then I went to see him, and the meeting did not go well. I mean, he was just condescending and arrogant and used fear to try to manipulate me into chemotherapy. When I just asked a couple simple questions, like, you know, are there any alternative therapies available? And what about the raw food diet? And he just shut me down. Hmm. And I created a free downloadable guide, by the way, that's on chrisbeatcancer.com, and it's called 20 Questions for Your Oncologist. And there's a link to it on every page of my website. And I put that together because most patients don't know the right questions to ask. Yeah. And they ask, and because they don't ask the right questions, they are just fed, basically they get the little bit of information that the doctor wants to tell them. And it does not really help them make a good decision.
No.
And so, like, the most important question you should ask is this treatment going to cure me? Yes or no? And you'd be shocked at how many patients don't ask that question.
Sure. Maybe they don't want to know the answer.
They don't want to know the answer. The answer can be right. It's a scary question. They don't want to know the answer. They just want to hope for the best. And but the thing that's so important about that question is that a lot of cancer treatments are not curative. They're just palliative. Hmm. So, and if you ask the doctor directly, is this curative or palliative? Well, curative means there's a high probability they could cure you. So, for example, childhood leukemia. That treatment is curative. 90% of childhood leukemia patients are basically cured. So, testicular, same story. Lymphomas have a high response rate to chemotherapy. Not as high as the other two, but pretty high. But it's the solid tumor cancers that are the problem. Breast, colon, brain, liver, lung, ovarian, cervical, melanoma. Those cancers have a very low cure rate for late stage. And they've made very little progress in 60 years since chemotherapy was first introduced. In fact, the overall death rate from cancer has only come down about 5% in 60 years.
It's astounding.
Think about that. 5% improvement in the overall death rate. And that's mainly because of testicular, childhood leukemia, and the lymphomas. But all the other solid tumor cancers, the death rate has basically not changed. Hmm. So that's dismal. I mean, that's an abject failure in the war on cancer, which was 1971, President Nixon. So again, I didn't know any of this stuff when I was diagnosed.
So did you confidently make that decision to heal yourself with the mounting pressure? You have all this, you have the fear and the doubt from doctors and families and friends, and you still said, I'm going to go this route. And like, how did you confidently make that decision or come to that? You just...
Well, I did not confidently make the decision. Let me just be very clear. Hmm. I was not confident. Appointment. We had that appointment. It went badly. I made a decision to get a port put in to start chemo, and that would be in a few weeks. And because he scared me into it. And so, but during that time, I'm just so thankful that I wasn't rushed into chemo the next day like so many cancer patients are, because I had time to think and read and research and pray and run my juicer. Mm. And in that time, it was that was such a scary time in between that appointment and when I was supposed to start chemo. So I really didn't know what I was going to do. And the day arrived to go get the port put in. And I woke up that morning and I just thought, I'm not doing it. I'm not going. I had been eating a raw food diet for weeks, been juicing, hardcore juicing. I had read a lot, obviously, in that time, and really felt, like I said, I wasn't confident, but I was more secure in doing that. Then I was less afraid in doing what I was doing than I was to do chemotherapy. Mm. And, but both options were scary, right?
Sure.
Both options. The chemo option is you're suffering immediately. You have no idea if it's going to work, if it's going to make the cancer worse, if you're going to die. And the other option is, no, you're not suffering immediately, but you have no idea if it's going to work and the cancer's kind of going to come back and you're going to die. Mm. Right. So you got two scary options.
Yeah.
And the option I chose was the one that was me basically hacking my way through the jungle alone, because most people didn't understand and didn't know how to support me and just kind of backed away. Mm. Right.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, let's just slowly back away from the guy who's lost his mind.
Yeah. He's decided to do this. And now, you know, we can't be responsible for this.
Right.
So you took it on your own, but you didn't do this really alone. You kind of formed a little team. You had a nutritional consultant and a retired oncologist that was interested in helping you on the journey that you were, as you say, in the jungle, sort of blazing for yourself.
Right. So what happened was after that terrible oncology appointment, I went and saw, my mom knew a naturopath. And so I went and saw him. She said, why don't you go see this guy? And so I went and saw him, and it was a wonderful visit. His office was peaceful and calm. There was no fear. He prayed with me. He was the first person to tell me I was making the right decision. Mm. I told him, I don't want to do chemotherapy. I'm on a raw food diet. And he said, you've made the right decision. And that was huge to have another person tell me I'd made the right decision. Because up to that point, all I had was my mom.
Right, right.
You know, and I'm an only child. So everything I do, my mom thinks is the right decision.
It's a bit skewed.
Right? I can do no wrong. So, so that was huge. And then he connected me with an integrative oncologist who had come out of retirement. Mm. And so he was back practicing he was in his 70s, but he didn't like being retired. And so he went back to practicing and had become very interested, you know, probably because he was like, heck, I mean, I could retire again. You know, he had nothing to lose. And so he became very interested in using integrative, natural, non-toxic therapies to try to help his patients, because he had spent a lifetime watching them die.
Yeah.
Right? Surgery, chemo, radiation. And like, you know, he'd just seen how ineffective those treatments were. So he was doing IV vitamin C. He was very interested in anything that could improve immune function, boost immune function. And so he was researching Chinese medicine, Eastern medicine. I mean, it's just an amazing guy, just an incredible gift, blessing in my life. That's the late Dr. Roy Page. So I did get assemble a little support team. It was very small. Me, my mom, a naturopath, and a surgical oncologist. Yeah. And so that helped. Mm. That helped. That did give me some confidence, right? Some confidence. But ultimately, you know, courage is the decision to move forward in spite of fear, mm-hmm. right? Fear, courage cannot exist without fear. And I realized that I had to move forward. You know, the fear was just going to be a part of the process right. that I had to learn to live with, to make peace with, and to overcome. Mm. And so I just stepped out in faith. That's what you do, right? You step out of the boat onto the waves. It's scary.
And embrace it and own it.
Yeah. And yeah. just say, okay, I'm going to move forward. I'm not going to cower. I'm not going to run. Fear-based decisions are almost always the wrong decision.
So you're down this path, and you know, this isn't, you're doing a radical, and the word is radical transformation, because it's probably yes. the complete opposite of what you had been doing, you know, working at Whole Foods, but not really participating in the health things like juicing and so on. This is not eating an apple a day. This is changing your lifestyle completely and how you eat. And really, as you say, overdosing on nutrition. It's like you had an internal instinct to do that.
Right.
How long when you started this process, when you said, okay, I'm stepping out in faith, that this is the path I'm choosing, that I know you had this oncologist, he was giving you tests along the way, that you started to go, this might actually be working, or you saw, what kind of tests were you getting that you were getting positive feedback?
I had blood work done every month. I had CT scans about every 6 months for the first few years, and then one at around the 5 year mark. So we were monitoring my blood work very closely, and I was seeing my naturopath once a month. And those were encouraging, right? Mm. Those were encouraging visits. And my oncologist was so excited. I mean, he was more excited than me when my scans would come back clear or my blood work would come back improved. And so, but it took time. You know, you don't get sick overnight. You don't get, right. I mean, you can get a cold overnight, but you don't get cancer overnight. You don't get heart disease overnight. You don't get diabetes overnight. These are chronic diseases that take years to develop, and they take time to reverse. It just takes time to heal, you know, and your body has to rebuild. It's got to repair and regenerate and detoxify and heal.
Was there a time frame when you recognized, though, that you were, I guess, quote unquote, healed, or there was no longer, or I guess you had the tumor removed, or that it didn't come back? Like, when did you feel like you could breathe a sigh of relief that maybe I had beaten this, or this was working?
Yeah. Well, the highest risk is in the first 2 years, typically. And I was in extremely high risk, being a young adult cancer. They're very aggressive in young adults, colon cancer. And so there was a number of other factors that it added to my increased risk. So it was a near certainty that it was coming back. Mm. If you'd asked anybody, including my oncologist, right? The one that was working with me, he was extremely concerned about a recurrence. Mm-hmm. And about supporting my immune system. And he had written a letter to my naturopath, even stating the fact that he was extremely concerned about my well-being and it coming back and supporting my immune system. So, but, you know, over time, you know, with each good report, right, my confidence grew.
Did you ever get a bad report?
No.
It was just always that whatever markers you were looking for were moving in a positive
direction.
Better.
Yeah. And the blood work, you know, my immune system activity was very low. There was maybe some indication of immunosuppression, and my oncologist was concerned about that. And so he was trying to get my immune system going at a very, very, very low white blood cell count. And so, and that might have been a reflection of me being on a raw food diet. Mm. It's a really interesting sort of sidebar there. But when you eat super, super healthy, your immune system kind of just calms down. Mm. You know, it's like if you're at battle, you need a ton of troops. You're always fighting something off.
Right.
But in peacetime, you don't need a ton of troops. You need just a bare minimum number of troops, like your white blood cells.
Right.
So.
And your body's probably going, what's going on?
Yeah. Here's the thing. It's like when you're constantly bombarding your body with foreign invaders, right? Your
like
immune
junk
system.
Junk food, you mean?
Well, junk food. Yes.
And, you know, any other
foreign
toxins.
Particles, right? Mm-hmm. Like all the processed chemical additives, preservatives, flavors, colors, all this stuff that's in processed food. Your body doesn't know what it is. It's not from the natural environment. And so that puts your body in a state of alert, right? Because it doesn't know, what are these things? And so your body's on alert. Your immune system is sort of always active, trying to assess and analyze these molecules that are coming in. Are these a threat or not?
Right.
And then you've got, when you eat a lot of animal foods, you're eating a lot of dead bacteria and pathogens. If it's fully cooked, if it's not fully cooked, you're consuming live pathogens, bacteria, potentially harmful. So your immune system reacts the same way, whether they're alive or dead. So again, this increases immune activity and surveillance and puts you in a state of sort of chronic inflammation and chronic, overactive immunity. Mm. So anyway, my immune system was my white blood cell count was very low, lower than below the normal range. And so there was either some suppression going on or it was just really relaxed because I was eating tons of fruits and vegetables and it wasn't worried. Yeah. But regardless, you know, over time, my white blood cell count did come up back into a normal range that he was comfortable with. And again, the scans just kept coming back clear. So we were just, everybody was very happy about that. And then once I got to the 5-year mark, it was like, then I really felt comfortable. I really felt, and Dr. Page had retired by that point and he had referred me to another doctor, another oncologist who, you know, looked at that and said, man, I think you're out of the woods here. And right. So I was like, that's great. And that's when I started thinking about sharing my story.
Sure.
Because I didn't have a blog, wasn't talking about it on social media. I had just gone back to work. You know, I was just eating super healthy. And
were people asking you about this? They knew you had it. Yeah. You didn't do chemotherapy. They must have been like, how are you feeling? What's going on?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And every time someone did, I'm like, okay, here we go. Right. It's going to be a long
I got to defend myself. Now, do you consider yourself permanently healed? You're like, what, 15, 17 years out from your original diagnosis?
17. It'll be 18 in December.
Yeah. You call yourself a survivor, but do you consider yourself permanently healed?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
At this point, when you're at 17, 18 years out, yeah, especially sure. when you get to the 5-year, that's pretty substantial. But then when you get to 10 years, then you're in a whole nother like
category.
Yeah. Category of survival. Well, 10 years survival is a pretty big milestone.
It's a huge milestone.
Yeah. So, and I'm coming up on 20 in just a few years. So, you know, yeah, I feel really great about all that.
But you continue this lifestyle. This isn't just something you did for a bit and then reversed.
Because I'm only 44.
Right. Yeah. You're young.
So I've got 40, 50 years, maybe 60 years of life potentially left to live. And that's 60 years of opportunity to get any type of cancer,
yeah.
Right? Not just colon.
Right.
And so I live a lifestyle of prevention now because I want to stay healthy and cancer free and heart disease free and diabetes free. And most chronic diseases are caused by our diet and lifestyle. And this is what I talk about in my book. It's not just about preventing cancer. There's so many diseases that are just caused by the way we live and what we eat.
Absolutely.
And if you change what you eat, then you can change your future. You can drop your risk. Your risk will never be zero, but you can drop your risk, I'd say, into the 1% range.
That's
right?
Pretty huge.
You're right. You want to be in the 1%? Well, you know, try getting my advice is put yourself in the 1%er category, the people that have the lowest risk of chronic disease. Mm-hmm. That's much more important than the 1% of all the rich people.
Right.
Because they're all getting sick too. So
And what I like in your book is that you,
rich.
Yeah, and you document a lot of this. The first half, I don't know if it's half, but you know, is your story, and the back half is really getting into the intricacies of the power of food. And I know you have a lot of strategies. You refer to it like juicing and smoothies, and all these fruits and vegetables. And you eat two big anti-cancer salads a day, and you give your recipes and what you do in there. Do you ever allow yourself a day where you're like, I'm not eating one of those salads, or you go to a family potluck and you eat whatever, or is it all raw food, clean, healthy eating all the time?
No, I'm not a raw foodist anymore. I was only 100% raw for the first 90 days.
Okay.
And then I went to 80% raw, 20% cooked. But it was still 100% organic and plant-based.
Hmm.
And so today I'm still plant-based. I would say it's 98% plant-based.
Do you eat any meat?
It's very rarely. So I might have a piece of fish occasionally, but it's not much.
So if you go to a family potluck and your aunt has made a casserole with some, some whatever concoction, do you eat that and go, oh, one day is okay? Or you're like, no, I'll go for the salad bar.
I eat the vegetables.
Yeah.
Right. When we do a family get together, there's always tons of vegetables. Always. Sure. Right. And I just eat a big plate of veggies and I'm happy. I eat the potatoes and beans and corn and salad and, it's fine. So that's what I do when we eat out. I eat vegetables. Very happy eating vegetables.
Right.
But yeah, I do have the occasional treat or whatever. And sometimes I feel a craving for a little bit of animal protein. And if I feel that, then I'll have some. But we're talking like maybe once a month. Mm. And when you look around the world, you know, the longest living people, I you know, after I got well from cancer, and in that, I started Chris Beat Cancer, the website, the blog, in 2010. So I was 6.5 years out of my diagnosis. I started sharing my story and writing, you know, making videos and writing articles about health and nutrition and what I did. And then I really got interested in nutritional science and became a passionate researcher, because I wanted to learn and I didn't want to say anything that was stupid or incorrect. So I wanted to make sure there was some science to validate natural, you know, just living a holistic, natural, healthy life. And there is, there's a ton of it, more than you can even read, more than any one person can read. So that was exciting to go from study to study to study and start piecing these things together and building a case for an anti-cancer diet and lifestyle to prevent and help yourself heal. And that is what Chris Beat Cancer, the book, is about. Mm-hmm. But that book, you know, it was published in 2018. So that was 14 years after my diagnosis. It's, you know, for anybody listening, I didn't just rush out and write a book and slap some book together. 14 years of living through it and then research. Mm. And so there's a ton of scientific references in there and all that. But the point I'm getting at is, I knew sharing my story was important. I just wanted to encourage people because I knew there were people out there that were dealing with cancer that didn't just needed to hear that they had hope and that they had their choices mattered, that they had the power to influence their outcome, to reduce their risk of recurrence, to increase their odds of survival and healing. So that's my mission. I'm a patient advocate. That's what I do. I'm a full-time health and wellness researcher, and I'm, you know, sharing information to empower anyone who wants it, that they can make choices today to influence their future tomorrow. And so, yeah, with the diet, that was a bit of a rabbit trail, but the point is I got into researching prevention and longevity. And in longevity research, I realized there were some things that I didn't, there's some questions I had that I was looking for answers to. And there were some assumptions I had that I realized were wrong. And what I found out was the longest, healthiest people groups around the world are not vegans.
Which is what? When you say vegan?
Someone who eats 100% plant-based. They never eat anything from an animal, including honey. Mm. Right? So they don't eat eggs or milk, no dairy, and of course, no meat, no fish, no chicken, right? Nothing from an animal. And then they don't even eat honey, which doesn't make sense anyway, but that's the one sort of nonsensical aspect of veganism, that somehow honey is hurting bees or abusing bees, and it's just false. But anyway, but the healthiest, longest living populations around the world do eat diets that are 95% plant-based on average. And 95% plant-based means they're only eating animal food a couple times a week. Right. It's not three times a day. It's a few times a week. And in some cases, it's just a few times a month.
Right.
So that gave me a really much broader perspective. And so learning that helped me, you know, get out of any kind of dietary dogma that I was in. And because there's a lot of it out there and there's a lot of people with agendas trying to convince you, you know, to eat a certain way. And, but the science is very clear that if you eat a diet that's 95% whole food plant-based, so it's just tons of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, legumes, nuts and seeds, herbs and spices, you are giving your body the absolute biggest, broadest nutrient spectrum that it can use to maintain health and vitality. And the least amount of junk food, processed food, and meat and dairy that you eat, the less, the better. There is, you know, on these people groups, Sardinia, Costa Rica. I mean, Sardinia, Italy, Nicoya, Costa Rica, Loma Linda, California is one of the longest living blue zones in the U.S. And Okinawa, Japan, you know, they all have this sort of vegetarian slash vegan high percentage population, mostly I'd say vegetarian, 95% plant-based. And, but it's not just the food. It's being active, living an active lifestyle, having very close community support, very strong social networks in real life, not on the internet. And living a low stress life. These are the common threads between these pockets of people that have exceptionally long life, like more people living past 100 than anywhere else in the world. And so, look, if you want to be live a long, healthy life, you study the people that are living the longest, right? And you connect the dots, you find those common threads, especially when they're isolated in these areas. So that's what the National Geographic Blue Zones Project was about. And it was just a terrific, terrific project. So informative. So anyway, that's the way I eat. I eat about 98% plant-based. Nothing is off limits to me, but I just don't have the desire to go out and eat a bunch of junk food or processed food or animal food. I don't crave it. I love to eat fruits and vegetables. I love to have a big bowl of oatmeal with fresh berries for breakfast. I love to have a giant smoothie for lunch. I love to have a big plate of cooked vegetables or a giant salad for dinner. That's what I like to eat. It gives me energy. I feel good. I'm very active. I train, work out 5 or 6 days a week. I rock climb. I do CrossFit. I mean, you know, I just
healthy
very,
lifestyle.
Very active, high energy dude. And I'm surrounded by people at my gym that are just can't believe I don't, you know, take protein drink supplements and drink these shakes and eat a bunch of animal food.
Right.
And I have super high endurance and I'm really strong. So, but again, it's just, we've been conditioned to believe that we need supplements, you know, protein powders or protein bars or to eat a bunch of animals in order to be healthy and strong and fit. And, it's just false, right? It's just not, it's not true. Your body uses amino acids to build protein, and every plant on earth, right? Every fruit, every vegetable has amino acids, and your body takes those and it assembles proteins. So you can get everything you need from
plant food.
There's a great documentary called The Game Changers that was produced by Arnold Schwarzenegger of all people. And The Game Changers is basically just highlighting all of these incredible world-class athletes, NFL players, Olympic athletes, MMA fighter, you know, just these incredible like athletes at the top of their game who don't eat meat, who are plant-based. And it's just great. It's just a great way to sort of show someone that like what you think is wrong. Like you don't need it to be healthy. So that's the way I live now. And
it's working.
Yeah, it's working. Right.
One of the other things that you talk about, you know, early on in your book is that you begin with the beat cancer mindset where you talk about you have to accept total responsibility for your health and be willing to do whatever it takes and make plans for the future. It's about, you know, getting purpose into your life. And like you said, when you had you have faith, you had to step out and you just sort of embrace that and you did whatever it takes. Can you speak to the beat cancer mindset a little bit? I know our time's getting near here, but.
Yes. The beat cancer mindset is you just kind of listed the bullets there, but you know, the first thing really is you have to believe you can get well, right? You have to believe you can get well. If you don't believe you can get well, then you are not going to make the right decisions from that starting point, right? And that's a big definer between survival and death is having that belief that that you can survive, that you can get well. And so that's where the beat cancer mindset really starts, is with the belief that you can get well. And then from there, yeah, you have to take responsibility for your health and say, step back and look in the mirror and say, okay, this may be my fault. And if so, That means I need to change my life. And what do I need to change? You've got to be willing to change everything, right? You can't leave anything on the table that you say, well, I'm not going to change that. I once heard a cancer patient say, I'm not going to let cancer change me. Mm. And someone who doesn't understand the disease would probably be like, oh, you go, girl, right? Mm-hmm. You're a warrior. You're a fighter. And, but when I heard that, it was troubling, right? It just, mm-hmm. to my core, I thought, oh, cancer has to change you. It has to. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't, you're probably not going to get well. It has to change your life. It is a wake-up call. It's a divine tap on the shoulder. And so being willing to change your life and to do everything in your power to help yourself get well is critical.
Absolutely.
That is the beat cancer mindset and not making excuses, right? And making a decision to embrace this season of life, to enjoy the process, to look at it as an adventure.
That can be tough to do if you're doing a cancer journey, to look at it with, how do you overcome the fear and worry that it doesn't steal your joy? I get the concept and endorse the philosophy, but man, when you're in it, how did you do it? I mean, you speak to faith a little bit. Obviously, you're a man of faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is like the perfect setup for me to plug my second book.
Yes, it is. Please talk about that.
Which is funny. And I don't know if you did that on purpose or on accident, but thanks. But no, every single day, right? Look, your life is just a daily process. You just got right now, you got today. Mm-hmm. And so if you break it down that way, you just have to focus on getting through today and taking care of yourself today in the best way you can, right? It's just, don't worry about tomorrow. Forget about the past. It's like, let's just focus on today. And what can you do today to help yourself survive and thrive? Food is a big part of it. Exercise is critical. And then your mindset, right? So giving your worries and fear to God and trusting Him with your life, that's just huge, right? Trusting Him to lead you and guide you and to provide for you.
Surrendering is difficult.
It's difficult, right? It's difficult, but it gets easier with practice. And so every time the fear would creep in, I would just have to stop and say, you know what? Okay, I'm feeling afraid. God, I trust you.
To acknowledge
I'm giving you my fear, right? I'm just laying it down and I'm going to choose to trust you and not to just to wallow in fear, right? Mm. And so Beat Cancer Daily is a daily devotional that I wrote, which is a little different than anything I'd even ever seen, but it's one page per day, 365 days of inspiration, encouragement, and action steps. Mm. So it's because I just realized, somebody can read my book and they can do what I'm saying, but they're not going to read my book every day, right? They're not going to read it every day. And I want to encourage them, this person, right, that's going through the journey, I want to encourage them in some way every day. And so each day has some specific encouragement or information that's useful or an action step that they can take. And there are major themes that are just repeated throughout the book in different ways, right? About taking responsibility for your health, about making good choices. Remember, you need to exercise, right? How powerful nutrition is, and giving your fear to God, not worrying, right? Addressing things in your life that are causing you stress. So that's what that book's, that's what it's about. And, came out last year.
Yeah. And you have another one, your third one coming out in October 2021 called
November.
November, Beat Cancer Kitchen. Can you speak to what we can expect in that? Obviously recipes, if it's a cookbook.
Beat Cancer Kitchen is a recipe book. Yes, it is a cookbook. Not all the recipes require cooking. Some of them are raw. And it's this beautiful full color. Oh my gosh, we are so excited about this book. There's 100 plus recipes in there, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, snacks, some desserts. It's just been a really fun process to put it together. And my audience has been asking for it for years, mm-hmm. for me to do this. And I just didn't want to, frankly. I didn't want to do it. I'm like, oh, cookbook, that just sounds like a lot of work. And I'm a creature of habit. Like, I'm not a foodie, so I can eat the same thing every day and be content. But my wife is a great cook, and she's always making dinner for the family pretty much every night. And she's just, you know, come up with a lot of great stuff over the years. And so with that, you know, we just took all the food that we eat and got those recipes together, and then started innovating, came up with some more. And so anyway, yeah, Beat Cancer Kitchen comes out November 2nd, God willing.
Yeah.
And we're super pumped about that. Thanks for bringing that up too. It's that'll be really fun. But
well, one of the things about, you know, Chris Beats Cancer, your first book, is that, you know, I tried to, as I was reading, make sure my anxiety went down a bit when you became aware of all of the ways that toxins come into our lives. But the other part of it was super empowering when you would talk about all these specific studies. Like, this just isn't something that you feel. There, a lot of the stuff is backed up with studies and empirical data, the power of some of these foods like carrots and beets, and you quote different studies. So it's a really interesting and fascinating read. And so once people read that, they'll get their daily inspiration, and then they'll have a cookbook. They'll go, you know, I want to start changing a few things around. Even if you don't go all in, you know, maybe there's a few things you can do. So I think it'll be a great way to give people some ideas, because usually when you start changing things, you need some direction.
You do. And I have a very deliberate strategy, and it's sort of like two-prong. One is you have to make people aware that there's a problem, right? Mm. There's a problem with our food supply. There's a problem with environmental pollution, toxic stuff in our food and in our environment. And these things are contributing to disease, right? So you have to, there's awareness, right? That part of it. And it's kind of, it can be overwhelming and kind of like, oh my gosh, like I was so much happier not knowing.
There's right? some truth in that, but not good.
Yeah. But again, it's like, hey, if something is slowly poisoning you, wouldn't you like to know? Mm. So that's the first prong. That the other prong is getting into the nutritional science and all this wonderful research on how food protects you and helps you heal and stay healthy and vibrant. Then you get comfort, right? And confidence and excited. And so I'm much more interested in getting someone excited about eating healthy versus trying to scare them into it, right? Mm-hmm. So the scary stuff needs to be talked about, right? It needs to be just put out there so that people are aware. But if you just stop there, it's, you know, I feel like you're really doing a disservice to someone, and scare tactics don't last. You know, right. You can scare anybody into doing something, but it's going to wear off, and then they're going to go back to their bad habits. But if you show them how powerful food is, diet and lifestyle changes is, how powerful your attitude and your mindset is, and reducing stress in your life, how powerful these things are, how powerful sunshine is and nature is, then that is, to me, that is like lasting motivation.
Yeah.
And that enthusiasm and excitement. I mean, you still have to feed your enthusiasm. You still have to keep reading and researching and learning, right? Because that keeps you on the healthy path.
Yeah.
And that's why I still am writing and reading and blogging and interviewing people that I want to learn from.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. You have a podcast, the Chris Beats Cancer podcast, and you have all sorts of researchers on there and people who have had the same kind of experience as you, who went down this path of healing and lots of interesting stories. Yeah.
Right. I've interviewed a lot of people who've healed survivors, you know, dozens and dozens of survivors who've healed all types and stages of cancer with a holistic approach. I've interviewed a number of medical doctors and PhD researchers who are experts in nutrition and disease reversal. And, you know, so all in the, you know, sort of holistic space. These are people who are incredibly just brilliant doctors and scientists who are not very well known. They're not, you know, talking heads on TV or whatever, like America's favorite top doctor or whatever, but they're actually helping people change their lives, get off pharmaceutical drugs, reverse disease with a comprehensive, holistic approach that's changing your whole life, changing your diet, changing your lifestyle, addressing the root causes of disease. And that's the best the medicine can do. I mean, that's the absolute pinnacle of good medicine is, you know, doctor, the word doctor actually means teacher. And the best doctors are the ones who are teaching their patients how to take care of themselves. Mm. That's, and so I love, I love that subset of doctors and scientists, and I'm constantly finding new ones and interviewing them and sharing, you know, sharing their wisdom with my audience, and I get to learn it too.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing your wisdom with my audience. I have a last question for you. What is it that you wish you knew at the beginning of your journey? I mean, obviously you know so much now, but starting out, what is the thing you wish you had known about healing cancer, going to the natural route?
That's such a huge question. And, you know, I started chrisbeatcancer.com because I started it to be the website that I wished had existed for me. Right?
Right.
When I was diagnosed, there was no social media, there was no YouTube, there were no good websites about nutrition and alternative cancer therapies or healing cancer holistically. There was nothing helpful on the internet, at least that I found. And so when I started my site, I just, that's what I had in mind. I just wanted to be really helpful and real and encouraging. And so the things that, you know, the things that I learned and the things that I wished I had known in the beginning, I learned them pretty quick. You know, I learned pretty quickly, which I could almost say was almost the beginning. It wasn't before I was diagnosed, right? But that your body creates cancer and your body can heal it if given the proper nutrients and care. Mm. That's the most important message. That's it, that cancer can be healed. It does not have to be a death sentence, but you have a part to play. You have a role to play in your disease and in your future. Mm. And if you take a passive role and if you delegate all of your authority, all of your agency to another person to save your life, a doctor, you're rolling the dice, right?
Yeah.
You're rolling the dice. If you believe that one person is going to save your life and that you don't have to do anything to help yourself except for show up to the doctor's office when they tell you to, you're not giving yourself, you're not setting yourself up for success. Let me put it that way. Mm. Right. And like I said earlier, if you read my book, Chris Beat Cancer, you'll see the science. You'll see that there are so many studies on the anti-cancer nutrition, the anti-cancer power of fruits and vegetables and diet and lifestyle and stress reduction and proper sleep and sunshine and spending time in nature. There's all these just amazing, fascinating, wonderful studies that empower you to do things to dramatically drop your risk of ever getting cancer, to drop your risk of a recurrence if you've had cancer, and to increase your odds of survival if you have cancer. And so knowing that, and again, I didn't do chemotherapy and I don't tell people not to do it. You know, you can do chemo or do whatever your doctor says, but healing happens at home. Mm. It happens at home in between those doctor visits. And what you're doing at home can make all the difference between survival and death. Hmm. So that's what I am encouraging and hopefully empowering people to do, is to make those decisions that they can easily make to help themselves survive and thrive.
That they have more of a control over their healing than they think they have.
Right.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I'll end with a quote from your book that you say, you yourself no longer view cancer as an enemy to be beaten, defeated, or a battle to be won or lost. Cancer is not something that you fight. It is something that you heal. Thank you, Chris, for sharing your story, encouragement, and inspiration today.
Thank you, Dana.
That was such a great conversation. If you loved it too, subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss an episode. Please go to iTunes to rate and review this podcast. And if you want to continue the conversation, connect with Soul Sister Conversations on the Facebook and Instagram pages. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook at Dana Lloyd Leadership, on Twitter at Coach Dana_Lloyd, and of course on LinkedIn. See you next week.